From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market reported as the very first day of December 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks at the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, will be here to take up the cash grain markets. In today's agricultural news, USDA is forecasting farm exports from this nation will set a record for the fiscal year, with Canada and China respectively the number one and two users of U.S.-sourced agricultural commodities. And a bipartisan group of 17 U.S. senators has lined up to let the ethanol blender's tax credit and the import tariff on ethanol expire. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then we'll explore what Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt calls the three legs of margin for the pork industry. And as we close out our program, Drew Lerner of World Weather will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And it happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher in the nearby December wheat contract, up 47 and a quarter at $6.97 and a half for the soft red. The March at 7.40 up 49 and a half, and the May at 7.63 and a quarter, 47 and a half higher. July futures up 46 cents to settle at $7.74 and a quarter. Hard red in the Kansas City December contract up 50 and three quarters of a cent at $7.80 and three quarters. December corn futures 5.51 and three quarters, up 21 and three quarters. March at 5.66 and a quarter, 22 and a quarter higher. The May corn at 5.74 and one quarter, up 22 and three quarters. In July, 5.78 and a quarter, up 22 and three quarters. Next year's December at 5.28 and three quarters, up 25 and a quarter cents. January beans at 12.83, up 40. The March at 12.91 and a half, up 40. May 12.93, up 40. July at 12.96, up 40 and a quarter. And next year's November at $12 and a penny, up 39. December bean meal at $3.46.60, $8 higher. December bean oil at $52.25, up $1.60. Mercantile Exchange live cattle futures at 103.57 and a half, with the lead option up 50 in the December. January at 118.40, down 77 and a half for the feeder cattle, and December lean hogs at 68.52 and a half, down 50 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. January crude oil futures, $86.60 a barrel, up $2.49. Ethanol at $2.11 and a tenth of a cent, a half of a cent higher. And the natural gas for the day at $4.27 and a half cents, up 9.5 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.40 and a tenth of a cent, 7 7/10 higher. And the gold futures today up $2.30 at $1,387.30. That, of course, is settlement price. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 260 points higher at 11,266. The U.S. dollar at 80.7 is down 0.48 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. As it comes from the National Weather Service, they say this afternoon should be filled with mostly cloudy skies, a high near 31 degrees, winds out of the west at 10 to 17 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 23. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 20. Winds out of the west again at 7 to 9 miles an hour. And then Thursday, we'll have skies that are filled with some flurries. Mostly cloudy, a high near 35. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 21. On Friday, sunny, a high near 33. Light east winds. And then Friday night, a 30% chance of snow showers. Mostly cloudy, a low of 27. Saturday, a 50% chance of snow. Cloudy, a high of 35. Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 26. The extended forecast says it'll be partly sunny on Sunday with a high of 32. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 20. And on Monday, partly sunny skies, a high near 28 in the Urbana-Champaign area. Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low around 17. And by the time we get to Tuesday, should be sunny again, a high near 30 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated right here on the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On this Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It was a busy night overnight in the wheat pit, sharply higher. Why?
Well, a couple things. We understand that there is this drier forecast that showed up in the Argentina area, and also maybe a wetter forecast in the Australian wheat growing area. And you add the PMI data, manufacturing data out of China showed a very healthy economy. And the ADP numbers showed up here in the U.S. that private business hired 93,000 more people. Added to that, the market had been mesmerized by this strong U.S. dollar, the continuation of a trend-following group that, you know, corn's in a downtrend. And the wheat was in a downtrend, and the only thing was really holding its own technically was soybeans. But you add this up, and the general feeling that the Chinese have only jawboned their major problem, and their major problem is they have to import large volumes of soybeans, and there is a group of people that feel that they ultimately will have to buy large quantities of U.S. corn or Argentine corn.
So what we have is some reports out this morning that showed, I guess, from your point of view and from many's point of view, a growing economy in China, a better economy in the United States, potential problems with weather in the winter wheat growing areas of the southern hemisphere, and it all adds up to potential usage by lots of the exporters from the U.S., right?
Well, and at the same time, Australia, you know, the corn's 4 to 7 inches tall down there. And, of course, you can remember Emerson and some of your grandparents saying a dry June is just exactly what the corn crop needs. But in this particular weather cycle in Argentina, it lasts usually into December, early January, and we are going in on a half a tank of the normal rainfall in that particular area. With that, and this American farmer got his harvest corn out of the way. He sold, you know, 80%+ of the crop, and I think it does not only meet wheat demand. It seems like Egypt is in the buying U.S. wheat now, but this quality of wheat in Australia is a big factor. The winter kill potential also in Russia is also being talked about.
All right, let's get back to corn and beans in particular. Okay. In the United States, and take up that discussion. When you talk to producers, they're perfectly willing at this point, or were at least yesterday and maybe not so much today, to leave the bin door closed. When should they open it back up first, and are they starting to talk about that, or were they asking that question of you today?
Well, when the prices were going down, we did have a few phone calls from people that did have to raise some big chunks of money for January-type pay. The bin doors are closed. The farmers are avoiding country elevators. The amount of grain that was sold ahead of time for January pickup, for January pay is enormous. There's not a lot of extra volume. The amount of volume that of corn and beans that need to come to market is going to be extremely small in the January timeframe. It's going to be, from historic standards, extremely small. So there's not going to be a lot of cash grain or forward selling. A lot of the new crop corn has already been sold into the marketplace. So I really don't expect too much resistance if the market would go higher at this time.
Yeah, so I guess what you're telling me is that the market, the end user, is booked up with corn, probably owns a lot of it and has it on hand. Is that right? And there's not much need to bring anything out of the country?
There's two types of end users. There's the end user that buys the grain at the country elevator and hedges it at the Board of Trade, and then there's the end user that buys those ingredients from large corn and soybean process and wheat processing companies. And my hunch, those people are probably short bought. And my impression also that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the Chinese aren't short bought too in certain commodity sectors. So to answer your question, I don't think the coverage is very good on anything out. And the reason we say that is it's very popular for the end user to only go in to buy 30-day increments.
Anything else you want to add before we let you
have
go?
Have a profitable day, Todd.
Hey, you too. Thanks much, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Well, a couple of notes here. Of course, please do visit our website. The address is willag.org or dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call that our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail. We updated it 10:15 and 3:15 daily with a bit of the numbers and some analysis. And then one other thing along the way, if you get a chance, you can always drop us a line. You can do that by this email. It's willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu. And that will go both to Dave Dickey and myself. Speaking of Dave, he's here now. He'll help us take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, USDA says U.S. farm exports are forecast at a record $126.5 billion in fiscal year 2011, an increase of $17.8 billion from a year ago. USDA increased its export estimate for 2011 by $13.5 billion from its August forecast to reflect an increase in a range of crops including soybeans, cotton, wheat, and beef. Asia accounted for more than half of the increase, with China alone up $2.5 billion. China will be the number two importer of U.S. farm goods at $17.5 billion, $500 million less than Canada. The 2011 figure, if reached, would surpass by $11.6 billion the prior export record set in fiscal year 2008 of $114.9 billion. A bipartisan group of 17 U.S. senators is calling for an end to ethanol's volumetric excise tax credit and import tariff in a letter sent to congressional leaders yesterday. The senators said the 45-cent excise tax credit and 54-cent import tariff are, quote, irresponsible and environmentally unwise, and their extension would make our country more dependent on foreign oil. Countering that letter, Senate Budget Chairman Kent Conrad and Senate Finance Committee Ranking Member Charles Grassley are preparing a letter as well to go to Senate leadership to defend the credit and tariff. The group of 17 senators are pointing to a July 2010 study by the Congressional Budget Office that found ethanol tax credits cost taxpayers $1.78 for each gallon of gasoline consumption reduced and $750 for each metric ton of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions reduced. After years of congressional debate, the black farmer discrimination suit against the Agriculture Department appeared to reach a conclusion yesterday when the House of Representatives passed by unanimous consent a bill the Senate had already passed. The House passage of the Senate bill will send the measure to President Barack Obama, who was expected to sign it. In what is known as the Pigford 2 case, payments to black farmers under the bill could total $1.25 billion, of which $100 million would come from the 2008 Farm Bill and $1.15 billion from the measure passed yesterday. The bill also included payments to Native Americans who charged that the Interior Department had mishandled oil and gas leases and arrangements for tribal water rights in western states. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Reminding you to visit our website. The address, of course, is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, hog producers have an opportunity right now to lock in a profit for the coming year's production, says a Purdue ag economist. I'll have more on the three legs of the hog margin puzzle that make the numbers work today. Let's look a bit more closely at each of the three legs of the hog margin puzzle, the price of corn, soybean meal, and of lean hogs, or the futures price in Chicago. Corn prices have backed off from the highs made in early November. The ending stocks are expected to be very tight, and any added demand or supply reduction could send corn prices sharply higher, says Purdue Extension ag economist Chris Hurt. Now, he thinks the price of corn is unlikely to settle down until next season's U.S. corn crop is well established late next summer. That's leg one of three.
Meal prices, we've seen moderation in those as well over the last few weeks, while world soybean inventories certainly are not as desperately tight as what corn is. We still have a ways to go in terms of could China buy more beans than we've been expecting, or could there be some growing weather problems in South America that would reduce those yields? Certainly that would send beans and soybean meal much higher. As we look at lean hog futures, especially next year for the April through August contracts, we see they're very close to the highs that they've made in 2010. So we have what appears to be some of the best hedging opportunities on lean hog futures for 2011 as well.
Given those three factors, the price of corn, soybean meal, and lean hog futures, Chris Hurt says producers unwilling to take large financial risk in the coming year may want to establish a sizable percentage of their 2011 margins at what appears to be profitable levels. He says if using futures markets, they must work closely with their lender on potential margin calls.
The charm of having three legs of the hog margin is that producers can establish all or just some of those legs, or some portion of each of those legs. Some hog producers are more concerned about feed prices than hog prices, and for them, the current corn and soybean meal prices may seem more advantageous to be a buyer and establish some of those prices. Of course, other producers, especially here in the Midwest, produce their own corn, and they have that in storage for their hog operation. And for them, then really establishing portions of their meal cost by buying meal futures or buying more cash position of meal, and also selling some of those lean hog futures or establishing cash prices may be more important.
Well, this final point of marketing wisdom comes from Purdue's Chris Hurt. He says many pork producers can seek market diversification. This can mean taking a portion of the margin at several different times during the year. Often, he says, they seek to leave at least one-third of that margin open and take whatever comes in the cash market, too. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Matt Kunisch of the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, is on the phone line with us to take up the cash grain market this afternoon. Hi, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, thanks.
First, let's talk about your ethanol plant still running full steam ahead.
Running full steam, a little over that, actually.
Okay.
A little over 100% right now.
And is that in anticipation of January the 1st?
No, that is because the profit margins right now are very good.
And when, if you were to take the 45 cents off the volumetric excise tax, if that does not get extended in the lame duck Congress, do you still have a profit margin left?
Yes.
Okay.
As of right now. Now, when you get into quarter two, quarter three of next year, when natural gas starts getting a little higher, then I would say probably not.
Okay, that's sort of what I wanted to know, and it's good to understand that stat as we move towards January the 1st, and
absolutely.
Congress has to take that event up, so it does matter at this point, but not as much as it has in the past. And
well, I would still say that it matters more to blenders than actual ethanol plants at
correct.
This point in time, but obviously, if it were to be cut or changed in any way, that it would be a matter of months, and then yes, it would change.
Indeed. So, and for the flip side of that, for those who don't understand the tax itself, the tax cut, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that the blenders receive, but not that the ethanol producer receives. So it's really targeted at consumers in order to help acceptance of ethanol.
Which would reflect demand overall, yeah. Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Yep.
Absolutely. Okay, so now let's talk about the cash grain market. Any movement of corn today?
Very, very little. Very little. More elevator bushels than producer bushels. Producers are caught right now in the market. The weather, I did have some guys, you know, that wanted to haul because of the weather was nice. Most of that stuff had been forward contracted. For the most part, new contracts are very quiet right now.
And on the soy complex side?
Same on the soys right now. I do look after the first of the year for that to pick up. Mainly for cash flow.
Are end users still bidding soy fairly strongly?
They are. In this neck of the woods, they are getting stronger. I was looking the other day. In the past 48 days, there has been an 80-cent improvement in basis in our area, which is just unheard of. But in this area, everybody rolled to the Jan a couple weeks ago. Obviously, you can get around option price out here.
And what are your bids for the day?
Delphi corn going to be at $5.57, Climbers corn at $5.62, and Delphi beans at $12.63.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Matt Kunisch is with the Andersons Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois, providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. There are no substitutes for donated blood. Blood donation takes 45 minutes and saves lives. Information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org.
It's National Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1857, a U.S. patent was issued to Ephraim Ball for his two-wheeled mower design. In Ball's long invention career, he also created a new plow, the World Mower and Reaper, the Buckeye Machine, and the new American Harvester. In 1878, the first telephone was installed in the White House in Washington, D.C. Alexander Graham Bell installed it himself. In 1936, the first patent was issued for a commercial-scale hydroponic system for plant culture. The word hydroponics was coined in the early 1930s at the University of California at Los Angeles to describe the growing of plants with their roots suspended in water containing mineral nutrients. It comes from two Greek words, hydro, for water, and panos, to work or labor. The first large-scale application of hydroponics occurred in November of 1935 at the Chemi Culture Company in Montebello, California. In 1990, British and French workers digging the Channel Tunnel from their respective countries drilled through a final piece of rock and shook hands. Over 22 kilometers from the United Kingdom, and more than 15 kilometers from France. And in 1999, the Russian government passed an animal rights bill that prohibited people from eating their pets. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us on this first day of December. Drew, I woke up and there were little ice crystals, I think they're called snow, kind of floating around out there and drifting across the roadways as I came in town. Not a lot, but winter has arrived, it appears, here in the Midwest.
Well, yeah, and from a meteorological perspective, December 1st is the first day of winter, even though the actual calendar says we've got a couple weeks yet to go before we get to that point. But, yeah, I think it's very winter-like out there, and the majority of the Midwest is going to continue to experience this. A lot of cool air coming up across the region periodically over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. So I think we've pretty much had it as far as the warmth is concerned for a while. But, hey, it could be a whole lot worse. We have temperatures in parts of Russia this morning that were 30 degrees below zero, and the same thing is true in parts of northeast China. So as long as it stays on that side of the hemisphere, I think a lot of us will stay happy.
Yeah, I believe that air mass is coming out of Siberia. Where does ours come from?
Well, it too can come from Siberia at some point. When you switch the winds around, that's why we're going to continue to monitor that cold air that is over Siberia right now. I think it's probably a 10-day period before we have to worry about it possibly coming over the pole and into our area. And I think that may not actually happen in that 10-day period. It'll probably be a little bit later on. But there's plenty of cold air in the northern hemisphere, and we will get our share of it eventually.
Take me back just a few days. Can we go back to the rainfall that moved across the Midwest, the Ohio Valley? How much did it do in terms of recharge of subsoil moisture levels, if at all, do you think?
Well, actually, I think it did a very good job. The topsoil moisture rating that we produce here shows the ground is saturated. We're only talking about the top few inches of soil, obviously. You go down deep, and there's a lot of dryness still there. And so most of the moisture that occurred this past week has already percolated down, and the topsoil is going to firm up fairly quickly. But it was a good step in the right direction, and I think we're going to see more of that. This La Nina event that we have right now will favor a fairly high frequency of storm systems marching across the Ohio River Valley, and that will likely help to further improve the moisture situation as time moves along.
Turn your attention to the crops in South America. They've been suffering through some dry weather, too.
South America weather continues to look fairly good as well. I think the majority of Argentina is going to struggle, though, for a good soaking of rain. That area continues to be a bit too dry, but they're walking a real fine line. They're getting enough timely rainfall right now to support most of the crop development that needs to take place right now. But if it dries out for any length of time, we're going to end up with some pretty serious crop moisture stress taking place, and we may lose more yield potential.
Have you done any look further out to see what you think might come in the next month or two there?
Yes. We believe that Argentina will actually not see a worsening situation, but maybe more like a status quo deal where we've got some timely rain that will come and go across the region periodically, but it's not likely to fester into a drought as big as we had in 07 and 08. But there will be still some loss in production potential there. The biggest dryness will probably become centered on eastern parts of Argentina, Uruguay, and the southernmost sections of Brazil, like Rio Grande do Sul, and maybe some immediate neighboring areas up to Paraguay. That'll be the area that probably gets a little too dry, and that'll probably take place in the latter days of December and on into January.
Drew, thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That's this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.